Well, it's good to see everybody back here again this week. Just very quickly, our second class that we went through, session that we went through last week was all about kind of just addressing the issue of that little thing called a sinful nature that we see in our children. Very quickly, we talked about dealing with personality quirks and issues. We talked about getting in the way of their sinful nature and interrupting it. But we also talked about how that's something that we need to be allowing the Holy Spirit to do in our own lives as well as parents. So there's a lot of things that we went through last week, a lot of things to think about. And we've got a lot of things to talk about today, too, or tonight, because we're going to be getting into a subject that I know is at the heart of really what parents want to accomplish with their children. And that is the whole issue of obedience and the importance of obedience. And we want our children to be obedient. We recognize in them the natural tendency to not be obedient. And we find ourselves many times struggling to know just how to address those issues. And, you know, we realize that obedience is not a natural thing for the flesh. So Sue is actually going to come share tonight, and then we're going to have our question and answer time afterwards. So I'm going to turn it over to her.
When we were discussing at home just the different topics that we would do for parent talk, and we got to this one, and I guess what happened was between the two of us, we were kind of doing an outline over the whole 6 weeks, I must have kept saying, oh, and this, and this, and this, oh, and this. And so he said, I think you should do that session. So anyway, I hope that the Lord will just use something. There's always some little nugget of truth I know that God wants to use in everything. What I want to start with is because the topic is called The Importance of Obedience, and we should probably ask the question, why should our children obey us? Why should they? And so we can go to the Word of God and look at some things that the Apostle Paul wrote to two people groups. He wrote both to the Ephesians and the Colossians, things about God's created order and our relationships. And we talked about this again in the first 2 weeks. But in Colossians 3:20, starting in verse 18, we have the instructions. Again, let's review of what our functions are within the family. It says, wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting to the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. And so everyone in the family has a function in the created order. They're not interchangeable parts. We don't obey our children, right? Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this pleases the Lord. And so we see that we can, and we can understand that we can help each other to be successful in the things that God is calling us to be. I know that I can help Paul be successful in loving me. I can be a big pill. I can make it really hard for him to love me, or I can make it a little bit easier for him. And the next verse in this Colossians passage gives us a key. It says, fathers, and I really think that we can say parents, fathers and mothers, do not provoke your children. The NIV says, do not exasperate your children, lest they become discouraged. And we find out that we too can help our children in their place in the created order. We can help them to obey. We can help them learn how to obey. This is what the Lord wants from them. The Lord wants obedience from them. It pleases the Lord. We as parents can help them achieve that. If they are able to have some success in obeying us, we get it, that they probably will have some success in obeying the Lord, translating that into their relationship with the Lord. And so I would guess that's probably why each one of you even came to any of these sessions, is you love your kids. You want to see good things for them. You want to see them succeed, and you want to see them serve the Lord as they grow older. So we have the capacity as parents to either encourage our kids or to discourage our children in their role to be obedient. And so tonight we want to talk about some ways to encourage our children. So I'm going to ask you a few things, and I actually do want you to answer. When I say obedience, I want two or three of you to tell me, what's the first thing that comes to your mind when you hear the word obedience? Okay, obey. Dwayne?
Doing what we say.
One other.
Immediately.
Immediately. Okay, excellent. Now, when I say the word discipline, what comes to your mind? I couldn't hear you.
Consequence.
Okay. I am so deaf, or else the air is so loud. One more time. The spoon. Okay. Excellent. One more. Discipline. Katie.
Hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I thought I would go to the dictionary as a start for those two words, and I think that'll give us a good foundation. The dictionary tells us that, went a little bit too far. The word obey means to comply with the command, direction, or request of a person or a law to submit to the authority. So to comply with the command to submit to authority. And discipline is the practice of training people to obey rules or a code of behavior using punishment to correct disobedience. So in other words, obedience is the result. It is the act of complying. And discipline is the training process we go through toward that compliance. So it's kind of interesting to think about those in terms of like some of the things in Romans chapter 12 about how God disciplines everyone he receives as a son. You know, we go through this with the Lord. We go through discipline. But the point of our talk tonight is for us to be inspired of the importance of using every tool possible that we have toward our children to help them to be obedient and to discipline them, which is the process of helping them to obey. So what I want to do tonight is I want to use a model that we find in the Word of example of when God brought the children of Israel out of bondage in Egypt. You know, we just did this in VBS. We just did this whole story. But I want to use some of the words that Moses writes as kind of a model of a few things that we can remember as parents. So when God brought the children of Israel out of Egypt and he took them to Mount Horeb, where he revealed himself, he introduced himself to them, he said, hey, I'm Yahweh, this is what I'm like, this is what I want you to be like, you're going to be an example to all the nations if you will obey me, and all that sort of thing. And the nation of Israel understood the expectations that God said. In fact, they said in Exodus 24, everything the Lord said, we will do. We will obey. So they clearly understood what God was saying to them. And God wrote the expectations down with the finger of God, wrote the Ten Commandments on tablets of stone, wrote the on parchment, wrote the social and the ceremonial laws. And even when the stone was destroyed, God rewrote it again. He reminded them of his commandments. He said in the law, I want you to read this every 7 years. And when you get into the land I'm giving you, I want you to go to these two mountains and I want you to declare all this. It was review, review, review. God expressed to them because they were in that time of him revealing his expectations and the law. In the same way that Paul has often told us, our children are in the days of law. Our children in our home, they are in the days of law. We are teaching them what our family is like and what our expectations for them should be like as well. What I want to do is take some of these verses from Deuteronomy, and I want to lift seven principles that we can kind of go through in terms of training our children, disciplining them to be obedient to us. And so I'll read through them first. And these, you can look at your sheets now. You may look at your sheet. And I'm going to read through all of these first, and then we're going to use them. And if you have a pen, when we get to the fill in the blank, you can do that. But I really wanted to start with this Deuteronomy passage, because if you've been around Calvary Chapel for very long, you know that Paul uses this for our children dedication. This is the passage that we often have recited. And Deuteronomy 4, starting in verse 9, says, "Only be careful and watch yourselves closely so that you don't forget the things your eyes have seen or let them slip from your heart. As long as you live, teach them to your children and to their children after them." And go down to verse 12. And the Lord, and this is Moses talking here, and he's reminding the children of Israel. He said, "The Lord spoke to you out of fire." And he's recalling that time on Mount Sinai or Mount Horeb when God spoke to them. "You heard the sound of words, but you saw no form. There was only a voice. He declared to you his covenant, the Ten Commandments, which he commanded you to follow, and then wrote them on two stone tablets." And then at the end of the book of Deuteronomy, in chapter 30, we have these three verses that I've chosen out. And Moses said, "What I'm commanding you today is not too difficult for you or beyond your reach. No, the word is very near you. It's in your mouth and in your heart so that you may obey it. I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses, and now choose life." So in that story, in that account of how God dealt with his big group of children, his big nation of children, I want to lift out seven things that we might kind of say, hey, this would be smart for us to apply into our own home. And so the first thing, using these verses, number one is, the Lord spoke to you. And you can fill in the blanks there if you want to. The Lord spoke to you. This is what Moses told them. God spoke to you. And in our parenting, we need to make sure that we clearly express our expectations to our children. That might sound like a no-brainer. But I bet when I say that, I bet if you walk back in your mind, you can, each of us can think of a time where we had an expectation that we didn't clearly speak. We just expected that it was, they were going to respond a certain way. So one thing we can do, the first thing to help our children to obey, is to clearly express, speak our expectations, use direct communication with our children. And by direct communication, I just mean like a teacher sort of thing. This is this. This is the way we do it. We can learn to teach our children rather than to quiz our children. And this is something I picked up years and years ago. I heard someone say that moms often quiz their children rather than instruct them. For example, you've probably done this. I have done this, but I stopped doing it. Your child, someone gives them something, and you say to them, "What do you say?" That's a quiz. I learned to look at my child and say, "Say thank you." That's direct communication. You've instructed them clearly what your expectation is. What do you expect? That they say thank you. When someone gives them something, their proper response is thank you. If they don't do it, we train. And we look at them and we say, "Say thank you. Thank you. Okay, done." That was an eye-opener for me, because I probably spent quite a few years quizzing my kids. "What do you say?" "I don't know." Maybe I had never trained them, you know. So that's what I mean about direct communication. Point number two on your outline that Moses told the people, you heard God's voice, and we must make sure that our children hear us. It's not enough to speak to them. We have to make sure they hear us. They really hear us. That we've made eye contact. That we've maybe gotten down on their level and looked into their little face and their little eyes. Have they heard what we said to them? Because I don't think it's fair that we hold them responsible for something they didn't really hear. We said it. They didn't hear it. They were busy. They were running. They were, you know, on their way to the bathroom or, you know, whatever. So to make sure that they hear us. Kids don't need to like it, but they do need to hear it, and they do need to understand. Number three out of the passage is Moses said, he commanded you to follow. He was reminding the children of Israel, God commanded you to follow. And we can adopt that in our parenting to make sure that what we tell our children is a command and not a suggestion. If we have a personality that's maybe a little, you know, probably none of the dads here have trouble with the command, but maybe some of the moms, you know, maybe we're not as practiced in direct communication, but to make sure that what we say is a command and not just a suggestion, that they know it's expected of them. The children of Israel knew what God expected of them. Number four, he wrote them. God wrote his expectations down. Have you ever thought about that? For this massive amount of children he had, he went to the trouble of writing down the expectations. I think we could do that too in our homes. Write down our expectations. Have a list. They're in the days of the law. Our children are in the days of the law. And so to have things written down that you can refer back to might help everyone quite a bit. When our older kids were little, there was a popular little training tool. It was called 21 Rules of the House. I loved it. It was sort of a coloring book format, and it had picture books. And I remember the first rule, and there was 21 things, that this is what, these are the rules of this house. And the first one is, we love and obey the Lord Jesus Christ. And then it went on from there. We are kind and respectful to one another. When we have something nice to share, we share it. When we get something out, we put it away. And it was kind of, they were all sort of little sing-songy phrases that the kids could really get and understand, and they were coloring sheets, and I remember I just kind of went over the top of, like, you know, teaching. But yeah, you know, I think it was a good tool, and maybe you might consider creating something like that. If your kids are little, I'm looking out here and kind of assessing as I'm going, you know, there are a lot of really younger families represented with little younger kids. But to find some way to make it fun and to write down your clear expectations, because then you can always go back to it. And I remember using that one so often, using that when we get something out, and I would do it as mom, you know, expecting the answer, we put it away, because it was something that was posted. It was part of the law of our home. Number five is, God had told them, this isn't too difficult. This is not too difficult. What I told you to do, it's not too difficult. And we need to look at some of the things that we do in our home and say, are my rules reasonable? Is my request reasonable? And kind of assess the things that we expect our children to obey and ask ourselves the question, is it too difficult or is it reasonable? If our children have five laundry baskets full of toys and they get to spend an hour in their room and then we say, put your toys away, and they're two, I don't know if I could do that. You know, that's like an unreasonable request. It's a massive amount. So we need to pare that all back, you know, and get a reasonable amount of toys to put away. Then we can expect them to do it, you know. Is our request age appropriate? You might have a rule in your home of an 8 o'clock bedtime, which will work great for a lot of years, but you will get to a teenage year when that is not an age-appropriate rule of the house any longer. And so we can look at our expectations and say, is it too difficult? Is it age-appropriate? Is it something that I would do? If I wouldn't do it, I probably shouldn't expect my kids to do it. Number six, God said, he said, the word is very near you. It's in your mouth and in your heart so that you may obey it. And we can ask ourselves, as we're training our kids to be obedient, can my children recite back to me what my expectation is? Is it in their mouth? Is it in their heart? Do they clearly understand me enough that they can actually say it back to me? If they can't say it back to me, maybe something went wrong, you know, earlier. It might be a good test to find out, is it in their mouth? Can they actually say it? A one-year-old, you know, if you have a no rule for some electronic equipment, but even a one-year-old, you know, one-and-a-half-year-old, they know you've said no, 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 and you look at them and they'll say to you, no, right? You've all experienced. They know. They can say it back to you. The law's in their it's in their mouth. They can tell you. But so I want to encourage us. Well, I don't have little ones anymore. But one thing that I think, particularly for mothers, if you didn't have a great example or of in your own home, then you're really seeking God's help on trying to find, you know, your function in this sort of thing. I just want to encourage you to lighten up and have fun and have some fun with obedience and do some role playing and play with your kids. I remember when that light bulb went on with me at one point, and I had read something about like training your kids to do something by playing it out, showing them, I want you to do this. Let me show you what it looks like. I'll do it first, and then we'll, like toys, picking up toys, for example. When I say pick up toys, this is what it looks like. So watch mommy pick up all the toys, put them in the basket, and I move it back over there. Now let's get them all back out. Would you get them all back out and spread them out, mess them around? Okay, now you do it. I'm going to count and see how fast. You know what I'm saying? It's like ask the Lord for ways to make this fun and to make this engaging. All of parenting isn't going to be fun, but if you can find a little bit of fun in there someplace, it goes a long way. And when you play with your kids, they will love you. What kid does not want their parents to play with them once in a while? And so if you can find a way to play obedience, wow, that's awesome, right? So see what God might do with that in your heart. And then the last thing, God had said to his kids, I've set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now I want you to choose life. And with our own children, here's the point of discipline toward obedience is all these things that we've talked about. We want our communication to be so clear that we clearly lay out the consequences or the blessings for obedience. If you obey, that's what God did, right? He told the children of Israel, he said, if you obey me, this and this and this and this is going to happen. It's going to be awesome. I'm going to bless you, on and on. If you disobey, this and this and this and this is going to happen. I think it's really important. It's hard work for us because it makes us, we have to think and we have to plan ahead. But if we can convey to our children what the expectations are and then clearly convey, if you obey, these are the blessings that are going to happen. If you choose to disobey, this is the, I won't call them curses, this is the consequences that is going to happen to you. Now, it's your choice. And you know, we do need to leave the choice with them. Ultimately, they have to make the choice. But we can set the stage for them to make that choice very clearly and to weigh all of the, you know, the pros and the cons of what they're going to do. I don't believe personally that it's bribing kids to say, if you obey, then we get to do X, Y, Z. That's just a blessing for obedience. Find blessings for obedience in your home. Figure out something. Talk, husband and wife, talk and pray about it. Find some things that are blessings for your, good things that happen if your children choose to obey you. There should be good things that happen, right? And then you also need to figure out what are the consequences if they choose to disobey. And that's really tough. We all have stories and that sort of thing. And we need to try to find consequences that aren't going to punish us. And maybe you've gotten wrapped up in that. You said, okay, if you don't do this, then you can't go there early or whatever. And then you end up taking two carloads of people. And so you're the one that got punished because your, you know, kid disobeyed or something like that. But to remember that it really is their choice. But we can help them become obedient by clearly setting out the blessings for obedience and the consequences for disobedience. Not following through with consequences will train our children to ignore our directives. So we need to be ready to follow through. We need to try really hard not to say anything that we're not going to follow through with because we will train them toward disobedience. if we say this bad thing is going to happen, and it never does. Okay? Not following through with blessings will hinder our opportunity for a relationship with us. We become less believable to them. And so when we set out the blessings and the consequences, we need to do the hard work and stick with it and make sure that we follow the path all the way through. That's why God gave children to young people. Okay, so just to wrap up here, what I'd like you to do is flip your page over. And what I did was I just kind of pulled some of those same things into almost just kind of an outline that you can go through with any kind of thing that you're thinking about in training your children. So, for example, name one area of disobedience, laziness, noncompliance that your child or children struggle with. And then you might ask yourself, does this relate to just one of them or all of them? Because if it relates to all of them, then maybe there's a systemic problem and you need to go back to the Lord and say, what have I not communicated properly here? Because all of them aren't getting this, you know. But if there's just one of them, then you might understand, okay, there's a stubbornness, there's, you know, a strong-willed, whatever. Number three, what are your expectations in this area? Are they realistic? Okay, as we go through this, what I want to do is I want to share an example from our life because I do have kind of a colorful story and I think you'll just enjoy it. So I want to work my way through this, sharing a toddler story about not staying in a room for nap time, which is common, right? I mean, everybody has to. I mean, some of you have compliant children and you say it's nap time and they're like, oh, good, I was hoping, and they just lay down and sleep for 2.5 hours. But then you probably have some other ones that are like, what, napping is for sissies? I don't nap. I don't stay in my room, you know, and all of that. But mom needs a break, and so kids need to nap and that. So I had a child who wasn't into sleeping at all. He wasn't into being a baby at all, for one thing, but wouldn't. So 2.5 and just would not stay in his room. So I asked, does this relate to all my children? No, one of them loves to sleep and this one is having trouble. What are my expectations in this area? My expectation is that a 2.5-year-old can stay in his room for 1 hour. I don't think that's unreasonable expectation. You know, kids, 2.5-year-olds should probably still be napping like every day, but you don't even have to sleep. I can't make you sleep. You just have to be in your room. You just have to power down, you know, for an hour. Number four, is my expectation realistic? Is it not too difficult? Well, I don't think that that's too difficult. That was my judgment at the time. Had I spoken that to my child? Yes, clearly. It's like, this is what we do. Our family rests from 1:30 to 2:30, all of us. Do you see that? We're all doing it. All the children in this family are doing it. This is what we do as a family. Clearly communicated to the family. Did your child hear and understand? Yes. Right in front of his little eyes, holding his little chin. Yes, I understand. That's, you know, how it goes. Do they know that it's a command and not a suggestion? Yes. We got that point across. It's what we do. It's what you will do. This is what happens here. Have you put this expectation command down in writing? I did not. 2.5-year-old isn't going to read anyway, so that probably was okay that I didn't do that. Would your child be able to tell it back to you? Yes, and he did. So here was what I had to go through then in terms of disciplining that child toward obedience. We had gone through all this, clearly outlined expectations, understood, and I would both leave the door of the bedroom open and I'd close it. Try both things, you know, just because you do want to be sensitive to, like, are you feeling claustrophobic? You're all locked in. So try it both ways, open and close. And lay down, get up, come out just right out of the bedroom, and I'd sit on the floor. It's right outside the bedroom because I knew that I had to train, you know. So I'd sit on the floor and he'd come out with a little smirk. And I'd say, did I tell you to stay in for 1 hour? Mm-hmm. Did you come out your bedroom? Did you choose to come out? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have to discipline. What did I tell you? Spank. You know, so I had the spoon, swat on the thigh, cried. I'm sorry. I said, what do I want you to do? Stay bedroom. Okay, so you go back in there. If you stay in your bedroom, we'll all be happy. But if you come out the door, what's going to happen, Spink? So we go back in. We had to do that 26 times. Same words, same tears, over and over. I called you at about 13 and about 18. And, you know, what gets into kids? But, you know, you may have some similar stories. And that probably, maybe the story is what you'll remember more than all of this. But I think it just underscores, even when you do all this, a child may make a choice to not believe you. And then you just have to do what you said you were going to do. Now, the next day, we did it three times. We had to go through that scenario three times. The third day, we did it once. Never did it again. That's not everybody's story, but it just kind of maybe shows kind of like how you, just what happens with some kids and how this model, I really come to believe, this doesn't answer all your questions in life, but even after you do this, even after you're clear, their choice can be yes or no. But the important thing is that we do need to follow through. And so that's all I had to share. I'll pass it over to my husband.
I think one of the important things about the story that Sue shared, I won't tell you which child it was, but it was about 26 years ago. I was on staff at a church up in Washington, and she called me at the office, and she said, "Paul, I don't know what to do. I have been putting this kid back to bed repeatedly, and I had to spank him and explain the situation, and I knew she was doing it well." She said, "I feel like a child abuser because I've had to continually spank this child and stuff." And I know my wife, and she was in tears over the thing. And she said, "What do I do?" And I said, "Susie, stick with it. You must win the battle of the wills." And yeah, okay. You know, and boy, I was glad it was her, because I don't know about you, but I never liked disciplining my children. In fact, I hated it. And when they got a little bit older, I told them so. I mean, I told them right off, "I hate this. I hate doing this. But, you know, I have to teach you what's right and what's wrong." Obviously, we'll talk more about specific discipline later on or in a different session. But in this particular situation, the issue was, is this child going to win? Or is the parent going to win? And it comes down to that battle of the wills, which a parent absolutely needs to win. And boy, that's because some of you guys, I know, you know what you're dealing with, you know, with your kids. And boy, I tell you, they've got ironclad wills, and they look at you in the face and they're like, "You want trouble? Well, you got me," you know, sort of a thing. And it's difficult. And plus, we live in this culture that's primed and cocked to basically make you think that any kind of corporal punishment that you inflict upon your child is tantamount to child abuse, which it isn't. It is not. And so we've got a lot of things kind of going against us in that respect, but we have to stay the course, and we have to win that battle. One other thing that I wanted to bring up, too, before I bring up our panel for some questions, is I've watched as parents trained their children to not obey or to not listen. I've watched. It usually happens at the front door. You got a family over and they have children, and they get to the front door and they say to the kids, "Come on, kids, we're ready to go. Get your stuff together. Get all your stuff put away. We're ready to go." And they walk up to the door, and of course the kids have learned that's just number one. We don't have to do anything at number one. And then the parent launches into this conversation, additional conversation,
And I'm sitting there watching, and their kids are back here, and they haven't even, they know. I don't have to pay attention. This is just number one. And so we'd talk for another 5 or 10 minutes, and they go, "Kids, I told you guys to get ready and get over and get and those kids." Anyway, last week we were down at the, and they start talking again. And I'm sitting there, and I'm uncomfortable with this because I know what's going on. They are systematically training their children not to obey the first time. They know, those kids know, that it has to happen a few times, and dad's volume level has to reach a certain decibel level before he's really meaning business. And do you know, parents, you need to understand something about yelling. You yell because you've trained your children that not to respond until you do. Don't ever blame your children for yelling. You've trained them to do it, and now you're getting frustrated at them because you yourself have taught them not to respond until you reach that certain decibel level. And kids love to play. They love to hang out and do their own thing. And so, what you know, they're just going to hang tight until they hear the certain... And you know, with me in my home, my dad would grit his teeth. He'd have this kind of this... And it was kind of like he'd set his jaw. And he'd kind of give... You know, and we all knew. It was four of us kids. And we all knew when dad set his jaw, it was time to move. Right? But if he didn't, if the jaw wasn't set, we could screw around or we can do whatever we want. We didn't have to listen. We didn't have to obey. And my mom even got to the place of saying, "Your dad's gritting his teeth," because she knew that was also the sign that he meant business. He was finally done with all of our shenanigans and it was time to move. But he trained us, and he trained us well. So, parents, please understand, when you are dealing with your children as it relates to obedience, if your kids are not responding to you the first time, then don't get upset, don't get frustrated, and take responsibility for that in your own heart. Now, if your children are really small, this might not be something you can sit and explain to them. But if your kids are a little bit older, it might be something that you can sit down and explain to your children and say, "Listen, when I've told you to do something, like come to dinner, or pick up your stuff, or get your room taken care of, or come out to the car because we're ready to leave, or whatever the thing was, I haven't always expected you to do that when I first say that. And I just want you to know I'm changing that now. And my expectation now of you is that you are going to obey the first time." And speaking of the expectations that Sue was sharing, I think that's a great question to ask yourself. Are my expectations reasonable? I think first-time expectations or first-time obedience is a reasonable expectation. Now, if you have trained your child to ignore you until the fifth, sixth, seventh time and until you reach that certain decibel level, then you have some training to do. And it may not be reasonable to expect that until you train your child and spend some time training them and going over and talking about consequences, talking about, you know, what's going to happen if they don't, you know. But it's okay when you've got kids that are a little bit older, you know, five, six, seven, to sit them down and just kind of say, "Listen, we're changing the way we do this in our home. We've kind of let you guys, you know, just wait when we say it's time to do something. Well, we're not going to do that anymore." So, and like Sue said, make it fun. Practice. Get them in the other room and sit them in the chair, and you're in the other room where they can't hear you, and you say, "Hey, kids, come in here in this room right now," and just have to get in. "Ooh, isn't that fun?" You know, make it kind of a fun deal if your kids are small. That's what I'm talking about. But see, then they can understand what you've just done. We're asking you to obey the first time. And, you know, you'll never, if your kids obey the first time, when are you going to have an opportunity to get mad at them about that? You won't. So you'll eliminate a lot of frustration in your own heart. You'll eliminate a lot of tension in the home, you know, when the kids learn and understand that you expect them to obey the first time when you say it, right? But remember, parenting, we told you this at the very first session, parenting exposes things in you, right? If your kids are not obeying the first time, it's probably because you've taught them that. And there may be some issues in your own heart related to first-time obedience or something like that. Or what you have allowed to take place in the home, how you haven't really expected them to come. Watch other parents. This is another really interesting thing, but watch other parents. Watch what they do. When people come over to your home and they get ready to leave or they tell their child something, you know, watch what they do. Ask and ask yourself the question, does this parent have an expectation that their child is going to obey? Right away, eventually, you know, sometime down the road, what are they conveying to their child? Much of what our children do, much of what they do in response to our parenting is a trained reaction on their part because of the way we've just kind of, you know, been pretty lax about those things. So some important things to remember, I think, there as well. Sue had some great comments through this whole thing. I mean, it was just really, really great reminders for the whole issue of obedience. I know there's going to be some questions. We want to give ample time for that. So I'm going to have my question Q&A panel come on up and take their places. And we actually...
This is really a good question about timeouts.
Oh.
So I'll start with that one because when I read this, you know, that... At one point, someone opened up my eyes to a really, really good use of timeout, and I've always really thought it was brilliant that when your child is just about ready to go off the cliff and disobey you is a great time for a timeout. It's a great time to kind of like, we need to pull you out of that and sit you down. And, you know, we think, I guess, in our culture, maybe now, we think of a timeout as a discipline, as a punishment. It may or may not be. If you've got a little introverted kid that's out playing with kids and they call somebody a name and you say, you need to have a timeout, they might just think, good, because I was sick of playing with all these kids anyway, you know. It's like, I need a little break. So that is not exactly, you know, any kind of a discipline. But I remember one time hearing that, like I said, a timeout, a great use for timeout is when you're watching your kids and you see, you know that kid, you know they're just on the verge of rebellion, on the verge of disobeying you, and to remove them from a situation or to change up the situation and say, you need a break because, you know, for whatever reason, you just need to have a timeout here and go in your room for 15 minutes or whatever. So just throw that out there for what it's worth.
Okay. Well, we actually, here's a couple of questions that, and I think they're very good. And we all may want to speak to them one way or another, but This is, I think, something that people deal in a very practical way. How should I handle the situation when I simply do not agree with something? There, my tablet just shut off. When I simply do not agree with something my husband tells my child to do, like eating everything on their plate before they get up from the table. This person said, I just don't agree that a child should necessarily be forced to eat all of their food, but I don't want to contradict my husband. So, some of you guys want to start with that one?
No.
That's a really good question.
It is. It is a very good question.
Do you know, honestly, one way or another, the husband and wife are going to have to get on the same page.
That's exactly right.
Do you know, consistency, both mom and dad on the same page, your kids, they know which ones they can play. When you set up the rules in the house, mom and dad have to be playing by the same rules. Establishing the same rules. They have to be in agreement. Or there's got to be a compromise. There's got to be something where a common ground where you guys can agree and so that you can effectively communicate to your child that clear expectation. it's not really fair for your child if mom's doing it one way and dad's doing it another. Mm-hmm. It's going to be confusing. Your child's not going to know what they're supposed to do. So that's mom and dad's responsibility. You guys are going to have to get in a room, and you guys are going to have to figure it out. Is that?
This is my biggest failure in life, and it hit me once that Jerry always supported me in every decision. Pretty much every decision as a parent. Every time I call him and say, the boys are doing this and they're driving me crazy, he would always say, Mom's right, and you... But I was terrible about second-guessing everything Jerry did. And it hit me one day that I wasn't near as supportive as he was about me. And so in the heat of the moment, a lot of times it took maybe even standing behind the boy and going, we need to talk, you know, so that we could talk together. Sometimes we had to just tell that boy, you know what, we're going to come back to this. You know, go in your room, or we're going to go in our room, we're going to discuss this. As far as eating food, a compromise is a good one, like making sure you're not putting too much on the plate, you know, coming together and making a decision that, you know, okay, we're going to give him little portions so he can succeed at eating everything on the plate. But anyway, coming together and making those decisions together, and sometimes in the heat of the moment, just saying, you know what, we'll be right back, and going and talking about it. And sometimes, as a wife, just saying, I am going to follow him, even though I don't agree with this. And I really do think God honors us honoring our husbands, and our children will survive the spinach.
I didn't agree that as a kid, but, you know, that. So as a wife, what are some of the things you probably shouldn't do in a situation like that?
You can model that. That was it. Yeah, no, I did. I modeled it well. My boys knew that I didn't agree a lot of times, or I thought Dad was being a little bit too harsh. And I'm Mercy. He's black and white. And they needed the black and white, for goodness sakes. I mean, I would be beating my head against the wall with some of them, and I wanted him to deal with it. But I wanted him to deal with it my way. I wanted him to be sweet and kind. But my sweet and kind way was not working, obviously, or I wouldn't have called the principal. So, you know, I needed to back off, and I needed to, you know, pray for him. I mean, that's pray for him, that he would have patience with them. But just, you know, honoring him, and that my kids did not realize. I mean, they needed to know that I was with him, and... But there were a lot of times they knew I wasn't, and that was wrong. There you go, confession. Yeah.
So that's one aspect of it. So you've got mom and dad don't agree, but what if life's happening and you're tired? You know, it's really hard to hold your kids to the same obedience level sometimes when you're tired. Doggone it, I've had a hard day at work. I'm coming home and Johnny or Susie, whatever, is doing something they're not supposed to do, and I just don't feel like dealing with it. Well, then you send another message to your child, too. So then, you know, and I know oftentimes, sorry, guys, but I hear a lot of guys come in, and they're tired from work, and they don't want to deal with the kids. And you know what, guys? You better suck it up, because, I mean, I hate to say it that way, but for your kids' sake, you've got to overcome your tiredness, and you've got to be consistent in your child obeying. Trust me, learning the hard way, one other thing I want to mention about obedience. Paul, I thought Paul was, he was just almost there, you know, with the first-time obedience thing. Think about first-time obedience like this. Johnny's running toward a busy road. Okay, and now think about how you handle your child right now. Is it first-time obedience? Johnny's running toward the busy road. And you're going, okay, Johnny, one, two, three. Okay, he just got ran over by a car. Okay, or Johnny's running to the busy road. And like Paul said, you didn't hear that. The child didn't hear your fever pitch. I mean, your loud voice so they didn't obey you. Well, your child just got ran over. And obviously I'm talking about small children. Mm-hmm. It's really important for your child. I know I'm talking about an extreme case.
Yeah, but it happens. It happened. If I can interrupt, it happened to us. I don't know if you remember. You've probably tried to block it out of your head, maybe. We were living up in Washington, and again, it was Aaron. Don't say Aaron. But he was about 2.5 years old, and we were in a furniture store, and we had parked right out across the door, but on the other side of the street. And they had the door wide open in the store. And we were kind of done with our stuff. We said, okay, guys, let's leave. And Aaron just made a beeline, saw our car, and just made a beeline right across the street. And I yelled after him, you know, but he didn't respond. And he just tore right across the street and just went over and stood by the car. Well, thank God there were no cars coming.
Yeah.
I mean, it was that close. And I, you know, of course, when that happens, you know, you want to kill him. You know what I mean? You're kind of caught between I want to love you and I want to kill you right now because you just scared me to death. And I that was one of those enormous eye-opening things that makes your heart palpitate and makes you realize as a parent, I got to get a hold of this kid. Because their life may very well depend upon when I say to my son, stop. Boy, I tell you. Because at 2.5, you know, he doesn't understand the danger, but I see it. And as a parent, I better be able to communicate that to my child that it's time to stop. So anything else you guys want to add to that?
Just for the fun of it, those of you who with little kids, every hard work of discipline you do at age 2.5 and 3, you eliminate at 13. I don't know. There's just like these two sets of time when rebellion sort of takes over a child's heart. And the more work you do at 2 and 3, the more you eliminate in the teen years. And we just really found that to be true.
There's another question here that says, how do I learn what age-appropriate expectations are? And where do I find that information without just comparing my kids to other kids, which, by the way, is not a good idea. But how do I learn about age-appropriate expectations when I'm thinking about what I should expect out of a 2-year-old as it relates to obedience versus what I should expect out of a 6-year-old for obedience?
I think Sue covered that pretty good.
Yeah?
You did?
So what should a parent do to kind of learn more about that?
I think when your 2-year-old looks at you, you've told them no, and they look at you with that look, and you know they're being totally defiant, then you can expect them not to do that behavior. And I think we learned something early on to identify the difference between childishness and total disobedience. Mm-hmm. Childishness is I'm jumping around and I spill my milk and make a horrible mess. That's childishness. Disobedience is when you were told not to do that and you do it anyway.
Right.
And so maybe on the milk thing, you tell them don't do that. And then next time they know. But I think that when you look at the 2-year-old and they give you that defiant look, that's a good sign that they're old enough to do what they're told as far as 2-year-old.
Well, and it is important. It's an important thing to mention, because so often as parents we discipline for childishness instead of for obedience. So make sure that it's something you've told your child not to do, and as Sue had mentioned, that you've communicated clearly what the consequences are. So in what Sue had mentioned already, you guys have already heard, but I'll just kind of restate it. When your child, I think your child, you have to, each child's different. So you can't say at 3 years old they can handle this. At 4 years old they can handle this. It's going to have to be, you know, as you're working with your child, you know when they understand and when they don't. And I think age appropriateness you're going to have to look at if that child can communicate that back to you, as Sue was saying. I think it's a good way of measuring whether or not that child is able to receive and understand you know, what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes?
I had one of my little girls. I said, okay, it's time to pick up toys now. It's too hard. How about I play piano and you pick up toys? I thought, if you can think that through and phrase that into a sentence, it's probably not too hard. But what I was going to say was, I think the answer, one answer to practically every single question that we could ask is go to the Lord. You know, just really like when you, if you don't know, you seriously don't know, I don't know if my expectations are in line. Take some time, a day or two never ruins a kid. Take some time, slow down, pray about it, think it through, talk it over between husband and wife, and then, you know, come back to it again.
The one thing I think, just as a final comment to keep in mind when you've got multiple children in the home, is that sometimes it's easy to sweep all of the kids into the same category of obedience or expectations of obedience. I'm not complaining as the youngest child in my family, but I'm just saying that sometimes when you've got older siblings, you know, you might expect the same thing out of your 2-year-old that you do out of your 6-year-old, and they may not be there. So something to keep in mind, you know. So, yeah. Okay. Any other questions from you guys? Okay, the question is basically kind of a very practical question of how do I make my child obey for the, you know, exhibit first-time obedience in a situation like that. So, somebody want to speak to that?
26 times, isn't it?
You know, you might just take the back of that sheet and work your way through all those questions, you know, and ask yourself, have I communicated clearly? She's probably one that wants a rule, really. Like, when can I have juice? And she probably needs a chart, probably needs, you know, it's like to know clearly what is okay. And then you're going to need to clearly look at her and say, if you ask me for this and I say no, second time when I've said no. So if you do ask me again, then there's a consequence. Maybe she doesn't even get the juice the next time it's on the chart to get one or whatever. But you're going to need to go through step by step by step and make sure that you dialogue the whole thing. And that's why it's exhausting, right, everybody? It's really exhausting. Parenting should be exhausting if we're doing it right. We should be worn out because, you know, we need to communicate that clearly. So that's what I'd say is work your way through that chart, ask all those questions, and probably with one like that, you just need to almost go overboard. And you'll probably say to yourself, does everybody have to do this with everything with their kids? And no, they don't. Not every kid is like that. But if yours is, then you better. And every day that you take at 4, you will eliminate some work and some heartache in the teen years. So just spend your summer communicating, setting up, you know.
The thing to remember about when kids ask repeatedly for something, they ask because they think they can get away with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why they do it. You know, if they don't think there's any chance. I mean, kids are pretty practical that way. It's like, if I don't think there's any chance that this is going to get me anywhere, I'm probably not going to waste my time. So we have to kind of ask ourselves the question, why is my child repeatedly asking? Well, maybe I've given in the past because I've just been worn down. We've all been worn down by our child. And so you know what? We've trained them over the years. If I ask and keep asking, can I have it now? Can I have it? Can I have it? Over and over again. Person's going to go, oh, here's the juice. Just, you know, be quiet sort of a thing, you know. Well, we just trained our child.
Yeah.
No, that's how many times I have to do it. And I can break them down, you know, and then the juice is mine. And they'll play the game with you, you know. So maybe you're coming back from a bit of a deficit where you've actually trained the child to do that. And so you have to kind of start over again now. And you know, here's the other thing, too. If you've made mistakes with your child, and who hasn't, you haven't ruined your child. You can start again. You can say, okay, now we're going to do it this way, you know. And you can say, this is the new rule. And so from here on out, the child says, can I have my juice? No. And I'm going to sit down because I know what's coming. It's that repeated question. I'm going to say, and I don't want you to ask me again until the big hand gets up here to the top of the clock, and then we can get your juice. But if you ask me again before that time, here are the consequences. Mm-hmm. And really explain that very carefully. And if the child asks again, you go through the consequences. And the child learns through consequence, ah, that doesn't work very well for me. Yeah. I lose things when I do what I'm told not to do. Kids are smart. They start figuring that out. You know, just like, you know, Aaron, when he was a little boy and had to be spanked all those times before, you know, just to stay in his room, you know. It was like, eventually he realized, getting up hurts, you know. I mean, disobeying my mother is a painful experience. So I'm like, I'm going to do that anymore.
One other thing I might add to those types of things is ask yourself as a mom, is there something I can do to kind of make it, again, helpful for her to obey? Like have a water bottle all day. You know, it's like you go through this and you say, and, you know, whatever the situation is, it's like, you know, juice comes at this time, but your water's there all day. And so then you know, because there's sometimes when your kids ask for things or something, you're thinking, you know, do they need to go to the bathroom? Do they need to, the whole bedtime thing, right? Like how many sips of water do they need? How many times do they need to get up and go to the bathroom? And that's a whole episode in itself that, you know, with, I know my grandkids, you know, that's an episode to get. And you have to think ahead of them. You have to think faster than them. And you have to go through all the things that they might possibly want and check them off together. Right? And say, now we've done all this. Do you understand? Are we agreed? We've done everything. Everything we need to do. No reason to get up. Everything's good. Yes, it's all good. Okay. You know, but yeah.
And I think begging can be a form of disobedience. And I struggled with allowing my kids to beg. And I didn't even always notice it was going on. And I was on a trip once with my sister. And one of my sons wanted to go to McDonald's because he was collecting something. So every town we went to, can we go to McDonald's, please? Can we go to McDonald's, please? And he was begging and begging and begging. And I wasn't even noticing it because I was so, he had me trained really well. I was saying no to him because my dad doesn't like McDonald's was the real reason. But anyway, and I was saying no, but he had me trained so well. But finally, out of frustration, no, we're not going to McDonald's. And my sister says, thank you. And it hit me, oh my goodness, I'm embarrassed now because he's driving everybody in the whole car crazy and I'm not even noticing it because it's habit in his life and it's habit in my life. And it's a form of disobedience. When I say no the first time, I need to be firm enough. And my personality is a real wishy-washy personality. Spineless jellyfish. And so it was hard to just say, no, we're not going to McDonald's. You know, and but if I had done it the first time, it would have saved everybody in this car a whole lot of headache. So, anyway.
Yeah. It's just funny, you know. I watch kids and parents like here at church, and they're up talking to me or something after a service or whatever, and the kid just goes, you know, shooting by like, you know, Roadrunner, and they're like, and they run, they call after him, don't run. The kid's gone. Kid's gone. I mean, they're practically out of earshot. But, and then they just go back to talking. And you know what I want to say? Follow your child. Go follow your child. If they just did something you didn't want them to do and you told them that they shouldn't do, don't run. No, they just run all the time. that parent just trained their child not to obey. And the kids, if the kids have their ears shut off, it's because we don't follow up. We don't, you know, we don't do that. It's the same kid who comes up to mom and dad while they're talking to somebody, mom, 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 mom. And then they get angry. Mom, bam, mom, you know, sort of a thing. And it's because we've just stopped listening and we've gotten used to the mayhem of them doing that sort of thing. And we've created this relationship with our kids where we've got to yell at each other to get each other's attention. And I know how that happens with young moms, particularly when you've got this, you know, you've got a couple of kids in the home and there's noise and the kids make noise and they play and they're loud. And pretty soon you learn to just tune things out, you know, just because there's so much noise. But the problem is that we start tuning out the requests for help, the you know, and the kids feel like they have to disobey or do, you know, it's like, well, mom's not listening. So anyway, you look like you were going to say something. Okay. Next question. Hector. Oh. Good question.
That's a great question.
Not to do something, and even told there will be consequences if they do it, and then the child admits to doing it when you asked what happened, because you weren't in the same room, probably, right? So you asked the child, well, what happened? Well, I pinched my sister, or I hit my brother, or, you know, whatever. And they've told you what they did, then should you still administer the consequences? And are you, in a sense, punishing them for honesty?
Well, I think, you know, that's a great opportunity, really, if you have the presence of mind to think it through when those things happen, to, if your child and you know the clear consequences for doing something like that, something foolish or name-calling or pinching or something, and they know what the consequences are, it can be a really great opportunity to just sit down and dialogue with that and explain God's mercy, that God does not always give us what we deserve, you know, what we, the consequences of us, and go through, you know, today I'm going to display to you mercy. I will not give you what you deserve for doing that, but just know it doesn't always happen. So it can be, I don't think you can really go wrong one way or the other, but it's a great teaching tool. Whenever a child does not receive the consequences for something that they know, it's a great way to say, God is merciful to us, and we don't always feel the consequences of what we deserve, and that's what I'm going to do today for you. But don't do it again, you know. So.
And actually, that's exactly how we used to handle it as well. So thank you for describing that. That's mm-hmm. great. one thing I was going to mention is that one of our children would voluntarily come and be honest about things after he did it, all the time, just all the time. And he had really a repentant heart. He still does it, matter of fact. Comes and everything, confesses everything. And some of it, I think you have to take into account the attitude of the heart. I don't know. You might be better at explaining this than me.
I've really struggled with it, with this one son, because he does have a really repentant heart. And so then I struggle with, am I disciplining him for being honest? And will I keep that open, honest conversation going? Susanna Wesley, who raised a whole bunch of children.
150 kids,
yes.
I think. Something like that.
And they either were pastors or they married pastors. She said she would never discipline for honesty. Honesty always won out. Now, I don't know if that's good advice, but...
But that was her
advice. But that was her advice, and it worked.
She had a good track record.
Anyway, but I think you can tell if there's a repentant heart, too. If there's a really repentant heart, and they know that I really blew it, then there's time for mercy like she's talking about. But if it's like, yeah, I pinched her, I think...
Pinched her,
I'm
going
to have
to
say probably... The disciplining, because we do face a lot of consequences in life. How many times have we as adults had to do the right thing even when we knew it was going to hurt? So I think there's lessons in that too. I don't know. I struggle with it. So maybe one day I'll figure it out.
There you go. It's as clear as mud.
Yeah. Really
clear. Yes.
Yeah. Want it to be a loving environment, but then they don't want to go. Mm-hmm. And yet, I'm just wanting that wisdom as to those boundaries, as to, you know, yes, this is a safe place for you to come. Yes, I want the kids to come to my house at the same time. It makes a lot of work for me. Mm-hmm. And then my schedule goes out the door.
Sure. So the whole question is all about opening up your home to neighbor kids and other kids and that sort of thing. And how it affects your own home, and you want to be a person who reaches out, loves on other kids, and that's a good thing to show your own children, frankly. But where's the balance? Where's the wisdom in just knowing how much, how often, and the other thing, you're probably, if it's a dysfunctional home, it could also be, and you didn't really mention it, but it could also be that sometimes they're not portraying the best attitudes of obedience to your children or something like that. I don't know if that's the case. Do you feel sometimes like there's some negative examples going on or?
Yes.
Yeah. Dad says yes. So, okay. All right. So there you go.
That's one whole level is the influence over your kids. So that's one whole different kind of set of questions. And you just as a couple need to decide, you know, on or off, is it even okay? But if you do want to have some level of evangelism to the family and open your home a little bit, if you decide together, yeah, a little bit is okay. I just think make good use of the timer and make a family rule or a family guideline. It's like if friends come over, it's this amount of time. And just tell the kids clearly. Just say, you know, when we let friends or neighbor kids come over, it's 45 minutes. So I'll go set the timer. And then, you know, and when it goes off, then we just go back to our own families. And that way nobody's offended and nobody's, you know, whatever. So that's just one idea.
That they all know ahead of time the expectations again. And then I also heard somebody say that the way they dealt with neighborhood kids that maybe used foul language was they told the kids, we don't use those words in our house. And if you do, you'll have to go home for the day, but you can come back tomorrow. You know, but I think our first ministry is our children, our own children. Yep. So protecting them first and then evangelism when they're little. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, and protecting our children first and then, you know.
And we are also going to be talking about this next week as well. Our subject next week is raising kids in a sin-filled world. And so we're going to be addressing all kinds of challenges to you raising your kids, things from within and things that come from without, and what, as a parent, you are responsible to do and to keep your kids safe, and we need to go because we're done. So let's pray. Father, thank you so much for giving us this time tonight. Thank you for the wisdom that you give. Thank you for your word. Thank you for the insights from Deuteronomy.
about clearly laying down the guidelines of expectations and obedience and understanding consequences, both good and bad. Father, I pray, Father, for all of the parents here, represented here this evening, that you would give them the strength and the wisdom and the patience and the grace to be able to convey your heart, to work together as couples, husbands and wives coming together, walking in agreement, walking in harmony in their parenting. Father, be with them. Strengthen each home and guide them in the process of parenting through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. Amen.